All right, it's at least we should begin by mentioning that it's Asara B'Teves. And Asara B'Teves, of course, has a great deal of meaning for us now. Asara B'Teves marked the beginning of the siege of Yerushalayim. And I'm afraid that Yerushalayim is under siege 2,500 years later, for who knows about the 100th or more time in its history. Yerushalayim is under siege, but this is a siege different than all previous ones. The battle for Yerushalayim is joint. So, I still have my watch over here that says, Himeshbachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini. So, I constant reminders. All right, we're going to win. All right, the parasha is Parashat Vayechi, the end of Sefer Bereishit. I would like to begin by concentrating a bit at the end of the end of the Sedra. Chapter 50, Pasuk 15. Nun, chapter Nun, Pasuk Tet Vav. It would seem that sort of at the end of the at the end of the Sedra, at the end of the Chumash, all of the threads have to be brought together, sort of anything that's left undone, incomplete, now has to end. And it seems just as we're coming toward the end of the story, something arises, something pops up, as we would say over here, a pancher. There's a monkey wrench in the works. It would seem after all of these years, the brothers of Yosef, the family is united, and something goes wrong at the last moment. Vayiru achei Yosef ki meit avihem. The brothers of Yosef saw that their father had died. Vayomru, when they said, Lu yistemenu Yosef, maybe Yosef is going to hate us. Vashev Yashiv lanu, and he's going to repay us at kol hara asher gomalnu, to all of the evil that we did to him. The family has now returned from the burial of Yaakov in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. They had gone from Egypt, buried him in Chevron. They have now returned, and the brothers are concerned that with the father no longer upon the scene, now is the moment for Yosef to strike. Rashi says, Vayiru achei Yosef, the brothers of Yosef saw that their father had died. What do you mean they saw their father had died? I mean, of course their father died. I mean, what is it that they saw? Says Rashi, Maru vayiru, what does it mean that they saw? He kiru bimitato, they recognized, they were able to see that the death of Yaakov made a difference. Eitzel Yosef made a difference to Yosef. Shahayu regilim lisod al shulchano, because they always used to eat by his table. Al shulchano shel Yosef, that's where they would normally eat their meals. Vohayom karvan bishvil kvod aviv, and he would draw them close. They would be close to him because of his the honor of his father. Whom yishemes Yaakov. After Yaakov died, lo kervan, they no longer seem this. They don't see this closeness of Yosef. So vayiru achei Yosef doesn't mean that they saw that their father died. Everybody knows the father died. The father died most probably a number of months ago. Remember, this has been a journey all the way to Eretz Canaan and all the way back. I mean, it's been a while. Now they see. And then Rashi goes on to say, Lu yistemenu. Here Rashi, of course, tells us something of a grammatical nature, because this pasuk, we have the most unusual word, the most unusual meaning of the word Lu. What does Lu usually mean? If only. Lu yehi. Right? Lu yehi. If only. It's something that we look forward to. So, I mean, obviously, Rashi has to point out that the word Lu has a number of meanings, and over here the word Lu means maybe, Shema. He may hate us, and he will repay us all of the all that we did to him. So Vayiru, they see a change in Yosef's attitude toward them, and they have obviously assumed that the change in Yosef's attitude toward them is because of his hatred. No, it's been, they imagine that it has been smoldering within him, I don't know how many years, 30 years, 40 years. Yosef has been waiting for the moment. He's been waiting for the moment that his father will pass from the scene, and then the wrath, the fury, the vengeance of his revenge is going to come out against the brothers. Vayitzavu el Yosef lemor, back to the next pasuk. So they commanded Yosef, so saying, Avicha tzivo lifnei moto lemor, your father commanded before he died, so saying. By the way, it's a lie. They're lying. And the Gemara says that from here we learn that you're permitted to lie in order to keep peace in the family, for shalom bayis. Now, I don't want to leave the sentence as though you know, you're given open license to lie, and you'll be able to say, well, Rabbi Gold said you can lie, right? Because everybody's going to interpret what's in the best interest of the family. Everybody will interpret it in their own way. So just let me tell you, the Gemara really says muta l'shanos mipnei hashalom. You know, maybe I didn't even translate it correctly. It doesn't say muta l'shaker, that you're permitted to lie in the interests of peace, because if that really would be the halacha, then that is being fulfilled every day in this country for the last 2.5 years. Okay. All right, there we got the political comment in. Now we can go back to Torah. Mutal shanos, in other words, change things a little bit. And what are they saying? They're saying that your father commanded before he died, so saying. Take a look at this. They made up the quote. They put words into the mouth of Yaakov. This is what you should say to Yosef. Please forgive the rebelliousness of your brothers, v'chatosam, and their sin, ki ro'o gemolucha, because they've done terrible things to you. V'ato now, sonno lepesha, avdei elekei avicha, forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father. V'yefk Yosef b'dabram elav, and Yosef cried when they spoke to him. He breaks out into tears.
Again, yes.
Yosef cries a number of times. He cries more than anybody else in Sefer Bereishis. Breaks out into tears. And I have the feeling he is so overwhelmed that he doesn't even have the ability yet to say anything to them. Vayelchu gam echov. Now, you see, the message of what the father's last will and testament to Yosef was, that message, they sent via a messenger. They didn't say it themselves. So shall you say. Now, after the messenger has been sent, and the brothers aren't even there in the presence of Yosef, and he's beside himself, and he's crying. Vayelchu gam echov, his brothers also went, vayiplu lufanav, and they fell before him, vayomru, and they said, hinenu l'chol avadim, we are slaves unto you. They just prostrate themselves before him. Vayomer aleihem Yosef, and Yosef said to them, I mean, here it seems, of course, that the family is going to fall apart. Vayomer aleihem Yosef said to them, al tiro, don't be afraid. Ki atachet elokim ani, am I in the place of God? Va'atem chashavtem alai ra, you thought about me evil. Elokim chashavah l'tova, God's intention was for good. He wanted it to happen this way. L'man aso kayom hazel hachayot amrav, in order that I can do as today to keep a mighty people alive. V'ata al tiro, Yosef says, now don't be afraid. Anochi achal keletchem, I am the one who will provide for you, v'tapchem, and for your children. Vayenachem otam, and he consoled them, vayedaber alibam, and he spoke to their hearts. Listen to what Rashi says. Vayedaber al libam. Listen carefully. He speaks to their hearts. Says Rashi. Yosef tells them, what are you talking about? You're afraid that I'm going to do something to you. Don't be silly. The fact is, Yosef is deeply hurt. He is deeply hurt that they even think that he might want to take revenge now. And the thought is so distant from Yosef. It's the last thing he would ever consider. In other words, this is most probably the unkindest cut of all. That his brothers suspect him that he's now going to pounce upon them and take revenge. One of the things that he says to them is, Ad shelo yeradetem lekan, before you came down to Egypt, hayu meranin en alai shani eved, they said about me that I'm a slave. Va'al yedeichem, and through you, no doubt, became known, shani ben chorin. It's when you came down and everybody got to know my family, so then they knew that I'm really a free man from a free family, and I was taken down to Egypt against my will. And now what do you think? I'm going to kill you? What are people going to say? You know what people will say? He saw a bunch of young men, and he praised himself by saying, you know, this is my, take a look at my mishpocha. And he said, Achai hein, they are my brothers. At the end he went and killed them. You know, shame geich os kicking, you understand? I'm really going to look good over there in the eyes of the Egyptians. Egyptians are going to say that he found a bunch of nice fellas, and he said there is mishpocha, and therefore he's a free man. And then at the end, you see, the truth comes out at the end, he killed them. Listen to the end of the Rashi. This is Yosef speaking to his brothers. Madness. What do you think? I'm going to kill you? Yet, yesh lecha ach shehoreget achiv? Do you have such a thing that a brother is going to kill a brother? Madness. Madness. Now, wait a minute. What's Yosef saying over here? I don't know if I would be one of the brothers, I would say that this is most probably the unkindest thing that Yosef could have said. He's standing before his brothers and he says, what are you talking about? Is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother? You think I'm going to kill you? Shige mister! Here are, of course, brothers who, it seems, wanted to do precisely that. So how are we to understand? You know, take a look at how the evidence is beginning to mount. So take a look at how the evidence is mounting. Number one, they're no longer invited to eat with Yosef as they used to. There's something else that I haven't told you. It really started after when they had gone up for the funeral to Eretz Canaan. So it's the Medrash says that Yosef took a side journey. You know where he went? He went to you think they went to Kefar Chimuas? That's interesting. No, you know where he went? He went to the pit. To the pit in which they had placed him. And he said over there, Bracha, Baruch, She'osa li nes b'makom hazeh, blessed is God who did a miracle for me in this place. So you understand the brothers, take a look at how the evidence is mounting over here. He goes to the pit and he says the Bracha. He no longer has them coming to his table. He does not give them the same kind of attention as they had when their father was alive. And here, listen to what he says to them. Klum yesh lechem och shehoreget achiv. Is there a brother who kills his brother? And this is Rashi says this on what words? On Vayedaber al libam. He's speaking to their hearts. It would seem that he is striking terror into their hearts. Unless, of course, and I sort of get the feeling that one of the themes of this Sedra, and I haven't worked it out fully, but this came to me after I had already said the Shia yesterday in the morning. It seems there's lack of communication. People see things and they hear things, but you can see and you can hear, and you know what? You're not seeing the truth, and you're not even hearing things correctly. The first pasuk that we began with this morning was Vayiru Achei Yosef. The brothers of Yosef saw clearly in the way in which Yosef conducts himself that their father is dead, that the relationship is now going downhill. Things are terrible. They see him going to the pit, and he stands by the pit over there, most probably with great kavani. He says, "Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, she'asa li nes b'makom hazeh." Thank God who did a miracle for me in this place. And now he tells them, "Klum, is there such a thing as ach horeg as achiv? Is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother?" I'll tell you, there's another example. There's another example earlier in the Sedra of a misunderstanding that lasts nearly all of a lifetime. There's another misunderstanding or a lack of communication, and there it's a planned lack of communication. At the very beginning of the Sedra, or near the beginning of the Sedra, Yaakov asks Yosef to bury him in Eretz Canaan. Al not tikbereini b'Mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. And then later on it says, Yaakov becomes ill, and Yosef is told, and Yosef comes to visit him. In the course of that second conversation, Yaakov says to Yosef, Vani bevoi mi padan, and I, when I came from Padan Aram, Meita alai Rachel be'eretz Canaan baderech, Rachel died on the road in the land of Canaan. Ba'od kivrat eretz, there was just a little stretch of road, lavo Efrata, to come to Efrat, ve'egbera Hashem, and I buried her there, be'derech Efrat, hi Beit Lechem. On the road to Efrat, at Beit Lechem, that's where I buried her. The great Rashi, we've learned this Rashi, I think, a number of times, but there's something different that I want to mention about this Rashi. The famous Rashi says the following: Vani bivoi mi Padan, and I, when I came from Padan Aram, afal pi shani matriach olecho, even though I am troubling you, laholicheni lihikave be'eretz Canaan, that you should take me all the way from Egypt and bury me in the land of Canaan. V'lo kachosisi leimcha, I didn't do that for your mother. She died near Beit Lechem, and there was still a little bit of a way to go to Efrat. Velo tomar, and don't say sheikvu alai gishamim, that I didn't have an excuse. I didn't have an excuse that it was raining and I had to bury her on the road. Velo tomar, I don't have the excuse sheikvu alai gishamim ilholicha ulekavra bechevron. I didn't have the excuse that it was raining and therefore I couldn't take her and bury her in Chevron. Eis hagodin hoya, it was the dry part of the year. Shehaaretz kalula umenukevet kichvara. What's the yard site of Rachel Imenu? Yud Aleph Cheshvan. Yud Aleph Mar Cheshvan, that's before the first rains. Was still dry. I could have taken her to Chevron. And I buried her there. Lo holachti afilu lebet lechem. I didn't even bring her into the city of Beit Lechem. V'yadati says, it's such a powerful Rashi. Yaakov says, V'yadatu, and I know sheyesh belibcha alai. I know that in your heart you've held it against me a whole lifetime. Then this is Yaakov and the most beloved of his children, Yosef. They had this great special relationship. But Yaakov knew in his heart of hearts, a whole lifetime, that Yosef holds this against his father. There's something about their relationship that just is not perfect, because Yosef holds it against his father that he buried his mother out there on the road. V'yadati and I knew sheyesh b'libcha alai, avol dalecha. I want you to know, Yosef, shal pi hadibur kivarti hasham. It was by the express word of God that I buried her there. Shetehei le'ezra l'boneha, that she should be a source of aid and assistance to her children. Kishiyagla osam Nevuzaradin, when Nevuzaradin, the commander-in-chief of the forces of Nebuchadnezzar, I mean, because it's Asara B'Tevis, that's another reason why I'm learning the Rashi. Because there's going to be a Chorban, and Jews are going to go into exile, and as they're going to go into exile, v'hoyu over in Derech Sham, as they pass by Kever Rachel, Yotzos Rachel al Kivra, Rachel comes out above her Kever, u'bocha, and she cries, u'mevakeshet aleim rachamim, and she asks mercy. Shenema, as it says, the famous psukim in Yirmiyahu, kol b'rama nishma, the voice that is heard from on high, it is Rachel who is crying for her children. In the past, I had asked the question on this Rashi, why indeed didn't Yaakov tell Yosef this much earlier in life? Why does he have to live for 50, 60, 70 years knowing that there's some kind of a wall that separates them and that their relationship cannot be a perfect one? Because Yadati, I know, Sheyesh B'Libcha Alai, I know that you've held it against me all these years. Because in order to tell him why he buried his mother on the road by Kever Rachel, he's going to have to tell him that there's going to be a Churban and Jews are going to go into exile. So what would he be telling him? I have good news and I have bad news. The good news is that I buried your mother here because that was an express command of God. But he's going to have to share with him the bad news, that there's going to be terrible Churban, destruction, Jews are going to be taken off in chains, in exile, and at least they will, even being taken into exile, they will be able to pass by Kever Rachel. So do you know what decision Yaakov makes? Yaakov makes the following decision. He will rather live his whole lifetime with that kind of a wall separating him and Yosef, his most beloved son, rather than tell him the bad news. When does he tell him the bad news? At the end of his life, when he knows that this is it, it's the end, I have no choice, now I have to tell him. But that's not why I'm learning the Rashi today. Why I'm learning this Rashi today is for another reason. All of his life, Yosef held it against his father. And in one single instant of time, he finds out that everything that he held against his father was wrong. His father didn't do it by choice. Al pi hadibur. It was the Ribbono Shel Olam who told him to bury Rachel there. And that Rachel is going to be the great source of comfort for the Jewish people. The only one who's going to be promised by God, v'shavu banim l'gvulam, the children are going to return, is going to be Rachel, nobody else. Which means the greatest thing that could have happened is that his mother is buried over there by Bethlehem. Couldn't be anything better. But the point that I want to make now is that he lived a mistake. Yosef lived a mistake his whole life. He thought that his father simply had not cared enough about his mother to take it to Hebron. Or whatever he may have thought. Whatever he thought, he held it against his father. And it was all a mistake. He made an assumption. And the assumption was all wrong. And here at the end of the Sedra, I mentioned it because here at the end of the Sedra, also the brothers are making assumption after assumption, and every one of them is wrong. The only time they finally begin to understand each other is when they talk to each other at the end of the Sedra. Look at all the assumptions that they make that are wrong. They see Yosef going over to the bar, standing over there and shuckling and saying, Baruch Shasali Nezba Makwaze. They assume that he must be thinking to himself right now, why did I suffer in that pit? And who threw me into that pit? Those brothers over there. Eichme brothers. They're not by the table anymore, so the brothers are thinking to themselves, here it is, this is the beginning of the end. Now he's going to bring all of his vengeance, his wrath, and his anger against us. And then, of course, the Rashi that we're up to. The Rashi that we are up to, where he says, what do you think? Here I've taken such great pride in Egypt that I have a family and I have brothers, and I've been able to prove through you that I am a free man. And now if I'm going to go and kill you, what will people say? And klum, is there such a thing as a brother who kills a brother? Now, when he makes that statement, they can misunderstand that as well. They may very well think that what he's saying to them is, is there such a thing as brothers killing brothers? You fellas know better than I do. But that's not what he means. That's not what he means. If you want to understand Yosef, now is it. It's the end of the Sedra. It's the end of Bereshis. We better understand him. We better understand him now. It is not for naught that Yosef is Yosef HaTzadik. There's good reason why Yosef is Yosef HaTzadik. I saw somebody who very beautifully makes a comparison or a contrast. Here it is, we've come to the end of Sefer Bereshit, and the Sefer begins with Adam HaRishon, first man, and it ends with Yosef. So sort of, you know, when you finish a book, you know, as you come to the end, fini, end of the book, so you begin to think over all of the characters that and all of the major events. Look at how the book, the Sefer, Bereshis, history began. The most unique and unusual human being of all, Adam HaRishon, first man, Yitzir Kapov Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created by the hand of God. He is the only one in all of history who's brought into being by a direct command of God. He forms, forges, makes this man. Here is a man who can't blame anything on, character or personality traits that he got from the Buba or from the Zayda, or blame it on his father or his mother. He also cannot say that the environment in which he was raised caused him to act or conduct himself in a particular way. Here is a person who is free of all negative influences. He is absolute, complete, perfect, perfect man. And not only is he perfect man, he is placed into a situation that is more perfect than any situation of all. Gan Eden, he is in the Garden of Eden. There are no problems, there are no worries. Can you imagine the idyllic existence? This is man in paradise. Man in paradise. We couldn't imagine a greater existence than this. And at the very beginning of history, on the first day of this man, tragedy strikes. He fails. He fails miserably. The first mitzvah that's given to him, Nikol Eitz Hagan Ochol Tochel, you can eat from all of the trees of the garden, but one you cannot eat from. And comes a moment of seduction. He fails, he falls, and he really brings banishment and exile upon himself and death on a world forever after. And what was it? It was a moment of seduction. It was a beautiful fruit. It was a beautiful fruit. And more than that, there was something sensual, and he had to have it now. Yes, we know that he blames it on his wife, and because he blames it on Chava, he's called Kafui Tov, he's called an ingrate. But the fact is that he simply fell before the seduction, the momentary need, or what he thought to be a need. And because of this, that really sounded the death knell on history. It's the beginning of history, but history is going to be a very, very bloody one because of the terrible, the fall, the failure of a first man. As you read the beginning of Torah, one would have to ask the question, if this is what happens to the greatest one of them all, is there any hope for mankind? Is there any way that mankind is going to be able to rise after a fall of this sort? So at the beginning of Sefer Bereshis we have one pole, and then we come to the end of Sefer Bereshis, and let's compare Yosef to Adam Arishon. Yosef, if we want the type of one who suffers and who suffers unjustly time and time again, if we want the classic example of a person who's battered from pillar to post, alo ovel de capo, he's really not guilty of any terrible crime. 17 years old, thrown into a pit, sold into slavery. There's a brief period during which he has some kind of respite in the house of his master, Potiphar, until his mistress, the wife of the house, begins to a campaign of temptation. And the fact that this young boy is able to resist this temptation because he fears God and because he's not going to be ungrateful to the master who has done so much for him. And then again he's in prison. Even his meteoric rise to power, I mean from the very depths, may Ashpos Yonim Evyo, from the very depths, Yosef charges to great power. This is enough to make anyone intoxicated either with their great luck or their great wisdom. And he has the wisdom of God. Remember, he's the one who's able to to interpret the dreams. So here, a life that had begun with such tragedy, with such suffering, everything has changed now. He is the most powerful man in the land of Egypt. And all of a sudden, who's standing before him? His brothers. The ones who, for all intents and purposes, are the ones who are guilty. They caused all of this suffering. Most probably the most natural thing for Yosef to have wanted to do at this moment in time would be to plan the sweetest revenge of all. The sweetest revenge. I think the end of Torah here is necessary in order to make one point absolutely clear, so that it should not be misunderstood in all that has taken place in the last few parshas. Revenge is something that simply does not exist, neither in Yosef's vocabulary nor in his mind. We could make the mistake of thinking that when he has his brothers in front of him, and he accuses them of being spies, and they suffer, they go through a great deal of suffering. Don't for a moment think that this is as a result of his thirst for revenge. If revenge is what he wanted, then that's exactly what he should be acting on right now at the end of Torah. Because now he has everything. He has the power. The only one who could have stayed in his way and stayed his hand was his father, and his father is no longer here. If revenge is what he wanted, now was the time to do it. And if he would have taken revenge now, that would have been proof that the way in which he acted to his brothers in the years that were past was also part of revenge, or planning revenge. But Yosef doesn't react or respond with revenge at all. Here is the moment at which he could be seduced, the greatest seduction of all. We're not talking about just a beautiful fruit on a tree. We're talking about somebody who could very well tell himself, you know, if you fellas will only feel for a little while what it was that I felt for all of these years, you'll learn a great lesson. He could even explain away or justify, rationalize his revenge. This is not revenge. This is education. Understand? All right. About time you boys need to be educated. It's at this point, at the end of Torah, that you know who appears before us? Yosef, who is the one who was able to resist the temptation of Eshet Potiphar, the wife of Potiphar. He is the one who resists the temptation of revenge. Revenge is not part of his vocabulary. It doesn't appear. Yosef is the great, he is the Gibor, and therefore Yosef is the Tzaddik. Yosef cries. Yosef cries at the very thought that they suspect that he may want to take revenge. Bali Musar, I'm going to take a different approach, but Bali Musar tried to explain this strange Rashi that we're dealing with, where the last words, it seems, that Yosef says to his brothers, is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother? Is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother? The Bali Musa say that what Yosef is trying to tell them is the idea of a brother trying to kill a brother is so satanical, so evil, it never for a moment occurred to me that this thought came from you. This thought had to be part of a divine plan. It never for a moment, going all the way back, it never for a moment occurred to me that you were the ones who had this thought that you wanted to kill me. This thought to kill me, v'chi yesh ach, horeg yesh achiv, is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother? Can't be. So where did this thought come from? The thought came from only one place. This is part of God's divine plan. And therefore he says, hatachat elokim anochi, am I in the place of God? Atem chashavtem alai l'ra, you thought evil, but God thought all of this for the good. It still leaves us with a problem. I feel that the Rashi may be saying something more, that as far as Yosef is concerned, the idea of revenge simply doesn't come into play at all. He is so innocent with regard to the idea of revenge. He doesn't even realize that when he's making the statement, "V'chi yesh ach horeg yesh achiv," is there such a thing as a brother killing his brother? He doesn't even see this as something that's going to hurt them. He never has that intention, because revenge is something that is distant and far from him. So first of all, in terms of our comparison to the beginning of Torah, if at the beginning of Torah we were left with the terrible feeling that there's no hope for man, because a man who is created by God himself and has everything going for him fails and falls into the trap of seduction and wanting that which he can receive at the moment, and that would have left us with the impression that there's no hope for mankind. So then comes Yosef at the other end of Torah. There's a great deal of hope for man, because man has the ability to rise above all of the temptations that surround him. A man can be a tzaddik. But then there's something else that I want to say. This alright, we have some time together. Sometimes what we need is to be shaken up. We also assume all sorts of assumptions, and we live our whole lifetime with these assumptions. Here we have Yosef in the Sedra, who his whole lifetime thinks that his father had arbitrarily buried his mother in Bethlehem. The brothers are making all sorts of assumptions about Yosef's relationship to them, and it's all not true. It's all not true. Thank God, at least by the end of the Sedra, everybody has communicated with everybody else, and everybody understands each other. Yosef understands his father. The brothers understand Yosef. Sometimes what we have to do is see things in a different light. What's the assumption that we live with? That the brothers wanted to kill Yosef. That the brothers sold Yosef into slavery, right? I mean, it's a given, right? Okay. So I want to tell you that one of the Mefarshim in particular says it ain't necessarily so. It may just be fascinating to take a second and a different look at the whole story of Yosef and his brothers. And one of the places where this Mefarsh is the Haksava HaKabbalah. Haksava HaKabbalah was Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. He lived in the last century. And what you're going to see in what I'm going to tell you now, how unique his Perush of Torah is. And what he goes in for is the real, what he believes to be the real meaning of words. Words say a great deal. For example, right over here, what does Yosef say to his brothers? Yosef says to his brothers in Pasuk Chav, Pasuk 20, Atem chashavtem alai ra, Elokim chashova letova. You thought about me evil, but God thought it for good. What do you mean the brothers only thought evil about him? They didn't do evil? Why doesn't he say, you did evil to me, but God turned it and wanted it for good? Why does he say, Atem chashavtem alai ra, you thought evil about me? Says Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the Baal HaKtava HaKabbalah, says that from here is proof to that which he has maintained all along. The brothers never really wanted to kill Yosef. Not only the brothers never wanted to kill Yosef, they never even sold him into slavery. If anything, the most that they could be accused of is a thought. But for Shiftei Kah, for the children of Yaakov, the thought in itself is already ugly and evil. So let me show you just a number of the psukim that he deals with in the whole story. It just may be a refreshing new look, and on the basis of this refreshing new look, the Rashi, this last Rashi that we're dealing with, is no problem at all. If they never planned to kill him, and to them the idea of killing a brother is anathema, and of course Yosef can say to his brothers, V'chiyesh l'cha ach, horeg es achiv, is there such a thing as a brother killing a brother? Now let me show you just a few of the psukim that he deals with. Back there in Parashat Vayeshev. If you want to come, journey with me back into Parashat Vayeshev. Perek Lamed Sayin. Pasuk Yud Chet, chapter 37, Pasuk 18. Chapter 37, Pasuk 18. Yaakov has sent his son Yosef to see how the brothers are doing over there in Shechem. The psukim before we had learned, we spent some time on the few psukim before. Yiru also made a chok. They saw him from afar. Uveterem yikrave lehem, and before he grew close to them, vayitnaklu oto lahamito. Let's look at those three words. How your English translation? How does it translate? Vayitnaklu oto lahamito.
They conspired against him to slay him, even before he came near.
They conspired against him to slay him, even before he had. Even before he had come near them. Does anybody else have another translation? All right. They conspired against him to slay him. All right. The word oto. What does the word oto mean?
Him.
Oh, no. Him. That was correct. Let's. And vayitnaklu means they conspired, right? Let's try and translate this. They conspired
him?
Is that a, does that translation,
what?
They conspired him?
Right.
But wait a minute. But in the pasuk it says, "Vayitnachlu oto."
Rashi and all of the mafarshim are aware that the word oto poses a shtickl problem.
It must be not conspired, then. Conspired is wrong.
No, conspired is correct. Maybe not. Wait a minute. That very good. Malka, talk me out. What would have been wrong if it would have said Vayitnaklu Lahamito? They conspired to kill him. Who needed the oto? Excellent. Excellent question. Vayitnaklu Lahamito, they conspired to kill him. Perfect. Who needs the oto altogether? So not only we don't need the oto, putting in the oto gives us a great deal of difficulty in translating it. Rashi is aware of the problem, and therefore Rashi says here, the word oto means a love about him.
Rashi says, "Vayitnaklu nitmalu nicholim v'armumiyot," they became full of trickery and cunning, conniving oto, kmo ito, imo, klomar, a love. Do you hear the number of words Rashi had to go through until he finally got ito with him, imo with him, klomar? You know what I mean with ito and imo? I mean a love about him. All right. Says the Ktav HaKabbalah, maybe the word oto means precisely what the word oto means all over. Him. And do you know what's really happening over here? Completely different story. Completely different story. Do you know what the brothers want to do? They want to leave him with the impression that they plan on killing him. They want to frighten him. Never in a million years does it occur to them to lay a hand on their brother. But here is a brother who seems to be walking around with the idea that he's going to rule over his brothers. He needs to be put in his place. He has to be told that you can't walk around like this. We're not children. We are your older brothers. We are great people in our own right. You're not going to walk all over us. We're not interested in listening to your dreams that you're going, that all of us are going to prostrate ourselves before you. So Shimon and Levi decide, you know what? We're going to show this Chevchaman. We're going to show him. Vayiru otome rachok. They saw him from afar. Ubeterem yikrav eleim. Before he came close enough to them. By the way, he's close enough to hear. He's close enough to hear. They're not saying it directly to him. They talk to one another and they say, "Let's kill him." So do you know what Vayitnaklu oto lahamito means? They tricked him. They deceived him. They deceived. The word Vayitnaklu means to deceive, to trick. Even Rashi says, "Nitmalu," they became full of nichalim va'armumiyot, trickery, conniving, and cunning. Vayitnaklu oto, they deceived him into thinking that they plan on killing him because they want to frighten him. They want to put him in his place. Chas v'shalom, you kidding me? Murder? Murder? Can't be. A brother is going to lift hand against a brother? Isn't that what Joseph says at the end? I mean, there's no question about it, of course, that I'm looking at these psukim differently this year than I have in previous years. I'm sort of revolted now by the idea that the brothers could conceivably have wanted to kill their brother. Says the Ktav HaKabbalah, Veselas! Anzachnishtun! It doesn't begin to start. No such thing. They deceived him into thinking. And you know what they say? This is how the plan goes into operation. They said to one another, "Hey, the dreamer is coming.
Yeah, you see that guy coming over there? That's the dreamer. Let's kill him, and then we're going to see what's going to happen with all of his dreams. What do you think, Shimon? Is that going to scare him? Huh? Let's kill him, and by the way, if you read this pasuk, let's take a serious look at the pasuk. If they're going to kill him, if they really plan on killing him, do they have to tell him or say to one another the whole plan? No, we're going to kill him. We're going to throw him into the pit. We're going to say a wild animal. I mean, the whole bit, I like that. They have to tell the victim their whole plan. The only reason they're saying the whole plan is so that the intended victim, who's listening a little bit off in the distance, should think that maybe this is a real plan. They have it all figured out, down to the finest detail. And we will see what will be with his dreams. Reuven, who's unaware that this is no more than an act of deceit on the part of Shimon and Levi, thinks they're serious about it, and therefore he steps into the scene. And he wants to stop what he thinks may be an intended murder, but it's not so. Let me take you to a further pasuk, pasuk 26, pasuk Chavav. Vayomer Yehuda el Echav, Yehuda said to his brothers, Ma betza ki naharog et achinu v'chisinu et amo. The way we usually learn this pasuk is, Ma betza, what benefit are we going to have? What are we going to profit if we kill our brother and we cover his blood? All right? That, of course, leaves the impression that we're talking about an attempt that they want to murder him. And Yehuda is the one who's stepping into the breach. No, 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 don't murder him. Let's read the pasuk a little differently. Ksav HaKabbalah says, Betza has another meaning. No. Kesef, that it means money, or what are we going to profit or gain. That's the way the Mefarshim learn it. But there's another meaning to the word that in modern Hebrew is very much in use. Bitsua. Livatzea means to carry something out, right? Ma betza, says Yehuda, if we leave him in the pit, ma betza, you know what may be the end result, the bitsua of this? He's in danger there. Ma betza, what may result from this is that indirectly, naharoget achinu, we're going to bring about the death of our brother. Now, how do we usually learn the rest of the pasuk? The chitzinu etomo, that we're going to cover up. We're going to cover up his blood. We're going to cover our tracks. We're going to wipe our fingerprints off the pit. We're going to cover our steps with. No. The Ksav HaKabbalah says the chitzinu etomo, for the rest of our lives, we're going to be covered by his blood. For the rest of our lives, we're going to be stained, we're going to be soiled, we're going to suffer for the rest of our lives because of him, if anything, God forbid, happens to that boy in the pit. Completely different way of looking at the pasuk, huh? And then watch another pasuk. Wait, I have to take you back to pasuk 25. I skipped the pasuk. Vayeshvu, they've thrown him into the pit. Vayeshvu lecho lechem, they sat down to eat bread. Vayisu einayim, and they lifted their eyes, and they saw, v'hinei orchat Yishmaelim bo'am yigilad, a caravan of Yishmaelim are coming from Gilad. U'gmaleihem nosin lechot u'tzri v'lot hochim lehorid mitzchaima, and their camels are carrying all sorts of great things to take down to Egypt. Of course, the whole idea that they're planning to kill him and they sit down, you understand, to Episasuda over there also doesn't make much sense. But they see
a caravan of Yishmaelim coming from Gilad. In Pasuk 25, we're given the information. In Pasuk 26, Yehuda speaks to his brothers. And therefore, in 27, he says, let's sell him to the Yishmaelim. That our hand should not go out against that boy. He is our brother, our flesh and blood. His brothers listened. Watch Pasuk 28. What have they seen going by? The Yishmaelim. And the Yishmaelim seem to be going to Mitzrayim. Vayavru anoshim midyonim sochanim. People who were midyonim, sochanim, businessmen, went by Vayimshichu vayalu et Yosef min habor. They drew Yosef and pulled him out of the pit. Vayimkeru et Yosef to Yishmaelim. They sold Yosef to the Yishmaelim for 20 pieces of silver. Vayavru et Yosef Mitzrayim. They brought Yosef to Mitzrayim. Who took him out of the pit and who sold him? The Midyanim. And the Midyanim sold him to the Yishmaelim. Do you know what happened? While the brothers are over here, the Midyanim pass by. They're the ones who most probably hear the cries of Yosef from the pit. They pull him out of the pit, and they know that they've got contraband over here. They know that this is hot stuff. So who do you... You need a fence. In other words, you have to... what are you going to do with the hot stuff? I mean, you know, it's a stolen color TV, the very stock. So you get rid of it. So you a fence. Who's going to take it down to a place where a bunch of gun of them over there? All right. They sold him for 20 pieces of silver. Do you think that the brothers needed 20 pieces of silver? Brothers, does it say any place over here that the brothers took him out of the pit? Does it say any place that the brothers sold him to anybody? Says the Ksavar Kabbalah, the brothers never sold him. The brothers never planned to kill him. What the brothers did do was, and for them, this also was a crime. Yes, they thought to sell him. They thought to sell him. Yes, Shimon and Levi deceived not only Yosef, Shimon and Levi may have deceived the brothers as well into thinking they want to kill him. But never occurred to them to raise a hand. V'chiyesh ach honeges achiv. Does a brother kill his brother? Isn't that what Yosef says according to Rashi at the very end? What I'm saying is, if sort of the theme of this morning has become that we make assumptions and we can't really be certain. Yosef made an assumption. The brothers made all sorts of assumptions. Maybe we've assumed something as well, because otherwise we're left with the possibility that the brothers Taka wanted to kill their brother. Difficult. I was thinking that as well. Very good. That even what Yehuda is saying, let's sell him, is only so that Yosef should hear. But more than that, you know what else I believe is explained by all of this. And listen, even if it is an unusual pshat, so it's worthwhile knowing an unusual pshat. All of the punishment and the suffering that befalls the brothers is also only in their imagination. Nothing ever really happens to them. Whatever happens to them is only... The fear, but not the real thing. Yosef, they're standing before Yosef, and Yosef accuses them of being spies. We're going to throw you into jail. We're going to lock the jail and throw away the key. And do you know what everything that happens is? Everything is only an illusion. It's not really true. It never happens. So you know what it means? That's midah keneged midah. That's measure for measure. If all that they wanted to do to Yosef was to frighten him, then they're going to go through periods of being frightened, fear. They feel it too. What occurred to me as I was thinking of this, the Gemara in the Sefer Megillah that says, why were Jews in the days of Mordechai and Esther, why were they under threat of total destruction? So the Gemara says, it's a machloket, or not really a machloket, let's say it's a a dialogue between Rav Shimon ben Yochai and his students. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says the reason why they were the reason why there was a threat of total destruction upon the Jews in the days of Mordechai and Esther is because Jews bowed down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar. The students of Shimon Yochai said because they ate at the party of Achashverosh. So the Gemara at the end asks, so for such terrible crimes, why weren't they destroyed? Says the Gemara, Haim lo osu elo lepanim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also lo osu elo lepanim. Why did they bow down to the statue of Nebuchadnezzar? Because they wanted to serve the statue? No. They only did it for appearances. They only did it for appearances. Haim lo osu elo lepanim. They left Nebuchadnezzar with the appearance. They left him with the impression that they are serving him. No, big deal. So therefore God's punishment also, the end is that the punishment of in the days of Mordechai and Esther was only appearances. It never happened. It was a threat. It was no more than a threat. So I would say that this is really what the Tzavah Kabbalah is saying. It was a threat. Brothers never meant to kill him. But even that they shouldn't have done. A brother, you don't act that way to a brother. And therefore the suffering that comes upon the Jewish people and the brothers is only because of this threat. And therefore he understands, of course, the end of the Sedra, where Yosef himself says, Atem chashavtem alai l'ra'ra, you thought evil about me. Elokim chashav olatova, God thought that it was for good. What the brothers say at the end of the Sedra here is so apparent that it's a lie, it's so pitiful. Because would the father really have been concerned about what Yosef may do to the brothers, then Yaakov himself would have said it to Yosef. Yaakov himself would have said it to Yosef. He would not have left it up in the air. If there's any fear that who knows how they may suffer, Yaakov would have done something about it. Good that you mentioned. Good that you mentioned that. I'll tell you why. He says by Shechem, he says to Shimon Belevi, Ki ba'apom, with their anger, horgu ish, they killed a man at Shechem, ubiritzonam ikru shor. And it was their will to uproot Shor. Who's the Shor? Yosef. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, it was only rotzon. There was only will, there was never action. They never planned action. And do you know what ikru shor means? La'aker a shor, if you take off from a shor or from a horse, its hoofs. Ikur means that something cannot move with speed and swift. You slow something down. So he says, Ritzonam, you know what what they wanted to do to Yosef? They never wanted to kill him. Biritzonam ikru. They wanted to slow down the shor. Take it easy. You're not going to be king. You're not going to rule over us. When he's talking about Shechem, where they wanted to kill and they killed, so he says, Ki bi'afam horgu ish. They killed it. But with regard to Yosef, no. I have one final thing that I have to say. And if I'm not going to say it, I'm going to be upset with myself. And I'd rather you be upset with me than I'd be upset with me. I didn't plan the shir to be this way, but the shir has sort of turned into either the art of communication or the problems of communication or the difficulties in communication, the idea of all sorts of assumptions. So I want to show you how Yaakov Avinu, how he communicates very beautifully. Just a parting word for the day. Maybe because it's Asar of the Tevis. At the beginning of the Sedra, beginning of Vayechi. Vayechi Yaakov Be'etz Mitzrayim. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. Yaakov lived a total of 147 years. Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamut, and the days for Yisrael to die came close. Vayikro Livnolu Yosef, he called his son Yosef and he told him, If I found favor in your eyes, Simno Yod Chotachas Yurechi, put your hand by my loin. Do with me kindness and truth. Al not tikbereini b'mitzrayim. Please don't bury me in Egypt. V'shachafti amavotai. I will, when I die, unesatani b'mitzrayim, carry me out of Mitzrayim, ukvartani b'kuratam, and bury me in their burial place. Vayomer, and Yosef said, Anochi asekid v'orech, I will do as you say. I want to just compare and contrast this with something that Yaakov says to his, to all of his children, to the rest of them. Chapter 49, Mem Tet, Pasuk 29, Pasuk Chav Tet. This is after he blesses all of the children. So it says, Vayitzav Otam, he commanded them, Vayomer Aleim, and he said to them, Ani ne'esaf el ami, I'm going to be gathered to my people, Kivru oti el avotai, bury me with my fathers, El ha-ma'ara asher b'stei Ephron ha-chiti, in the ma'ara, the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Chittite. Ba-ma'ara, in the cave asher b'stei ha-machpela, that is in the field of the Machpela, asher al-pnei Mamre, which is near the plains of Mamre, Be'eretz Canaan, of the land of Canaan. Asher kon Avram asasada, Avram had purchased the field, made Ephron ha-chiti l'achus ha-kaveh, from Ephron ha-chiti he bought it as a heritage for a grave. Shoma kavru at Avram, that Sarah ishto there, they buried Avram and Sarah his wife. Shoma kavru at Yitzchak, that Rivka ishto there, they buried Yitzchak and Rivka his wife. Veshoma kavarti at Leon, there I buried Leah. Miknei hasadeh, the purchase of the field. Vaha ma'ara asher bo, and the cave that is in it. Me'eit b'nei chet, from the children of chet. Yaakov ends his command to his children, and he dies. He has already at the beginning of the Sedra spoken to Yosef. Why does he speak to Yosef? Why does he call Yosef to tell him, don't bury me in Mitzrayim? Because the only one who has the ability to do the power, who's going to get visas for everybody? Who's going to get transportation? Misha Biyodo Lassos, the one who can do. So he speaks to Yosef. Why does he speak not to the brothers? Yosef, he begs, oh no, please don't. Imotsasi, if I have found favor in your eye. The brothers, he commands. Maybe the answer is in something else. The thrust of Yaakov's words to Yosef is completely different than that to which he says to his sons. If you go through what he says to his sons over here at the end, do you know what it seems? A history lesson, or more than that? Do you know what Yaakov sounds like at the end of his life? Like a lawyer. The party of the first part, Avram bought this field from Ephron, the party of the second part. And not only that, I want you to know precisely attached to this agreement are the precise parameters of the field and the cave and the double cave, which is in the land of Mamre, the plains of Mamre, in the land of Canaan, 500 meters west of this. I mean, he sounds like a lawyer. He's dying now, and he sounds like a lawyer. But more than that, to Yosef, it's not even important to him to tell Yosef where to bury him. He just says, bury me in their burial place. But you know what he says to Yosef? Al not tikbereini b'mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. And when I die, unesatani b'mitzrayim, carry me out of Mitzrayim. Just get me out of here. Get me out of here. That's his message to Yosef. To the brothers, he goes on and on about Eretz Canaan. Where? Not the where not, but the where yet. Two completely different messages. You know why? Because Yaakov is not only concerned about where he's going to be buried, Yaakov is also the master educator of his children. The one who blesses each one as he does here in Parshat Vayechi. In the blessings, you know what he demonstrates? That he knows each one of them, their strengths, their weaknesses, their talents, their abilities, with what they can be challenged. It's amazing how a father is able to see all of his children for what they are. And what he says about them is really what they become throughout history. But he now has, he has two concerns. About Yosef, his concern is that Yosef is going to want to stay in Mitzrayim. No place in the world has been as good to Yosef as Mitzrayim. Yosef in Mitzrayim has become the greatest success of all. Do you know what Mitzrayim is for Yosef? What Gan Eden was for Adam HaRishon. Even better. He earned it. He didn't fall in Gan Eden. Yosef grew and achieved meteoric heights in Mitzrayim. Yaakov is afraid that Yosef, and if not Yosef, certainly his children who speak Hebrew with an accent, but speak Egyptian like Sabras in Egypt, his children are born in Egypt, will see Egypt as their homeland. To Yosef there's one message. Yosef, Gewalt! Al notik bereini b'mitzrayim, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. When I die, unesatani b'mitzrayim, carry me out of Mitzrayim! Get me out of here! The word Mitzrayim isn't even mentioned once when Yaakov speaks to his, to the other children. That's not the issue. You know what he's concerned about with the brothers? There he has a completely different concern. Not that they're going to see Mitzrayim as their homeland or the promised land, but they're going to lose. They're going to lose the connection with Eretz Yisrael. As long as Panusa is good in Mitzrayim, and blah, blah, Mitzrayim. If the economy goes a little sour in Mitzrayim, listen, we can always move to America, you know, we'll move to England, I mean, a lot of places in the world. Australia. I understand. I heard from somebody last night in a Milchika restaurant, somebody told me the beef in Australia, the beef, is infinitely better than the beef in America. And I thought that an American steak at Kosher Delight is the Garden of Eden. So I made a mistake. One of these days we'll just have to go to taste a steak in Australia. Mehr fehlt mir nicht. I have nothing better. This is the great dream in life. That's right, to have a steak in Australia. What Yaakov is concerned about is not that the brothers are going to see Mitzrayim as their homeland, but number one, they're not going to see Eretz Yisrael as their homeland, and number two, they'll become citizens of the world. Wherever the Parnasse is goodeth, that will taketh them there. That's it. That's where they're going to go. Therefore, when he speaks to the brothers, he is very subtly but very powerfully imprinting one thing on their minds. There's only one place, only Eretz Yisrael. Hebron, Ma'arah, Machpelah, we bought it. Avram and Sarah are buried there. The elder Zayda, the Zayda Yitzchak is there. Mama Leah. To them, he wants to make certain that they know Eretz Yisrael is the only place in the world. Postscript. Two postscripts. At the beginning of the Seder, Yaakov speaks to Yosef and tells him, Al notik bereini b'mitzrayim. But then when he falls sick and he calls him a second time, he doesn't forget to tell Yosef, Yosef, your mother is buried there. Even to Yosef, he passes on the message that not only don't bury me in Mitzrayim, get me out of here. Get me out of here. And this is, after it says by Yechi Yaakov, Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim 17 years, Chazal say, and the Zohar says, they were the best 17 years of his life. He lived it up in Mitzrayim, and despite that he tells Yosef, oh look, don't let bury me here. And then he also reminds Yosef, remember, Keva Uvis, the Tata and the Mama, are both buried there. And not only that, you know what else he tells Yosef? Al pi hadibur kvarti hasham. It was the Rebbeinu Shalom. You're a big believer? Huh? Right? You're a big believer? The Rebbeinu Shalom wanted me to bury her there. Because the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted to make sure that Jews are going to come back there to Israel. Remember that, Yosef. Remember that, Yosef. Does it all end in a sense exactly the way Yaakov wanted? Of course, what's the end of the last two psukim of the Seder, the last two psukim of Sefer Bereshit? Vayash by Yosef et b'nei Yisrael leimor, Yosef makes the children of Israel swear, Pakod yifkod elokim etchem, God is going to remember you, v'ha'alitem et atzmotayim, he said, get my bones out of And when I see the word mizeh, I'm just throwing this out as I think of it right now. Yaakov was still able to mention Mitzrayim by name. Al not tig bereini b'mitzrayim, please don't bury me in Mitzrayim. When I die, unesatani b'mitzrayim, carry me out of Egypt. Yosef has reached the point he can't even mention the word Mitzrayim. Do you know what mizeh is? You know what the word zeh means? When there's a certain disgust with something. Halozeh, or when Amnon says about Tamar, get her out of here. He doesn't say, v'ha'alitem et atzmotai, take my bones out of Mitzrayim. Get my bones out of here. Which means that as we come to the end, it's not only the end of the Sedra with the beginning of the Sedra, it's not only the beginning of Bereshis with the end of Bereshis, and maybe the overall idea that I wanted to get across somehow or other is we jump to conclusions, we make assumptions. By the way, Yosef, who had no idea whatsoever, the thought of revenge never occurred to him, went very innocently to the pit. After the Levaya, he went to the pit, and he wanted to say a bracha. Rebbeinu, thanks for saving me. He had no other intention. Why doesn't he invite them to his table after the father died? Says the Medrash, and some of the Mefarshim say that as long as the father was alive, they would all eat together. The father always insisted that Yosef sit at the head of the table. But he's not the oldest. There are a whole bunch of brothers who are older than him. Yaakov insisted that he sit at the head of the table. After his father dies, he feels that he doesn't want to sit at the head of the table, so they're going to make him sit at the head of the table. He doesn't want to. He'd rather not eat with them. He doesn't want to lord over them. He doesn't want to rule over them. His intention is good, but they don't. They jump to conclusions. They make assumptions. Once they learn that Yosef is really the great tzaddik, then he's able to say to them, "Klum yesh ach shahoreg esachiv." Is there such a thing as a brother who kills a brother? We made it just in time. At the end of the Sedra, at the end of Sefer Bereshis, everybody got in what they had to say. Yaakov said what he had to say. Yosef said what he had to say. The brothers said what they had to say, and they all end up ready to be the creators of Klal Yisrael. Thank you.